We're looking tonight at the last of the Ten Commandments. You shall not covet, the last commandment declares, which immediately makes us think, what does this mean? Covet. It can be used in the Bible in both a positive and a negative sense. It means a strong desire. In the commandment, coveting is a strong desire for something that you have no right to have at all. No right, for example, to take your neighbor's house, his wife, his servants, his animals. And so this is an inner sin. You shouldn't set your sights on anything that you have no right to possess. And the startling truth is, living in the Western world and in a society which materially in so many ways has prospered, the startling reality that if things could make us happy, satisfied, peaceful, you'd think we'd be living in a society that would be happy. But it seems the more we have, the more we covet, we want things that we don't have, and the more we forget God. And we're living in that pressured society that makes us think, if only I had a new house, a new wife, new children, new job, new portfolio, if only I won the lottery, if only I had a new car, new school, new career, whatever it is, if only, then we'd be happy. And this commandment reminds us then the dangers of living in that kind of society that so much infects our thinking, our hearts, our minds. Coveting can do its evil work, giving you strong desires, but for things which you have no right to have. And yet which make us think, it's so easy to think, if only I had this, then I'd be happy, then I'd be satisfied, then I'd be content. Sometimes I think to myself, if only I was living in a time of revival, then I'd be happy. Now, there may be legitimate things that it would be good to have, a nice house. But when your life, your happiness, your satisfaction rests on that new house, that's when it steps over into coveting. Or a new car may help you to get around if your car isn't working so well. But if you say, oh, if only I had that car, if only I had that Lotus car that I see across the road from my house, then I'd be happy. You see what coveting can do. So I want to look with you tonight at five facts about coveting in this commandment, and to look at what sometimes has been called the invisible sin. This is the invisible sin. As we've been looking at the Ten Commandments, most of the other sins are easy to spot. You murder someone, or you steal, or you lie, or commit adultery. But coveting is invisible. You may drive a BMW and have a Rolex watch, and yet you don't have a covetous bone in your body. On the other hand, you may be relatively well off and still be intensely covetous. Because the human heart gets out of control with this invisible sin. Whether it's a poor person or a rich person, if only I had that, then I'd be happy. That's the tricky thing about coveting. It's the invisible sin. I've been a pastor for quite a few years now. I've never had anyone come to me wanting to talk about the sin of coveting. I think I've had every other commandment, someone at some time or another has come to me to say, I want to talk to you about this, even murder. Adultery, lying, other things. But no one has ever come to me, Pastor, I have a covetous heart, can you help me? The invisible sin. Second thing is, we learn in the Bible, this sin is the root of other sins. In Romans chapter 7, we're going to read the Bible together. It was announced in the reading, the Bible together plan. The idea behind that is, if you're new here tonight, that month by month in the church, we try to encourage people to read a book in the Bible and then come together on a Thursday night in one of our Bible studies at the start of a month to talk about lessons we learn in that book. Well, if you're going to take part in it, and I hope you will, and if you read through the book of Romans, you'll come to Romans chapter 7, where the Apostle Paul talks about the way this commandment worked in his heart. If you've got a church Bible, it's page 761, Romans 7, verses 7 to 9. Paul was thinking, outwardly at least, that his life was all together when he thought about the first nine commandments. Now, he was thinking about the commandments in an outward way only, which wasn't the intention. But then he says in verse 7, what shall we say then? Is the law sin? Is the law sin in that it shows us our sin, it provokes us, shows us and reveals sin to us? Certainly not. On the contrary, says Paul, I would not have known sin except through the law. It's the law of God, he says, the Ten Commandments, that showed me my sinfulness. Now notice where he goes. I would not have known sin except through the law, for I would not have known covetousness except the law had said, you shall not covet. But sin, taking opportunity by the commandment, produced in me all manner of evil desire. For apart from the law, sin was dead. I didn't realize my sin, says the Apostle Paul, but when this commandment about coveting struck me, then I realized all sorts of sinful patterns in my life. I was alive once without the law. He thought he was doing very well. But when the commandment came, sin revived and I died. This commandment touched his heart. It showed him his spiritual death. And the commandment which is to bring life, I found to bring death. So as you see what's happening, Paul had been going through the Ten Commandments, thinking, yes, 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 ticking them off, I've obeyed them. And then, because he was only thinking about the surface, he came to this commandment about coveting. Now you can't only deal this with this commandment on the surface, because this is a commandment that deals with the heart. So when Paul looked at his heart, suddenly he decided, and he discovered, oh, in my heart, inwardly, I do covet. I want things that belong to other people that I shouldn't really be chasing after. I think sometimes, if only I had this, that, or the other, I'd be happy. And suddenly he realized coveting was a huge problem in his life. See what the law had done? The law made Paul realize his sinfulness before God. And the very act of saying, do not covet, awakened in him a desire to do. Isn't that true of the human condition? You're walking along and you see a sign that says, wet paint. And you think to yourself, I want to touch this paint, see if it's wet. Now, why is that? The sign, wet paint, awakened the desire in you. You've been walking along, you wouldn't have gone along touching that seat if the sign wasn't there. But because the sign is there, wet paint, you think to yourself, I want to see this for myself. It awakens the desire. You're walking through the park, you see a sign that says, keep off the grass. And you think to yourself, I'd really like to put my foot onto the grass. Now, if the sign wasn't there, you'd be quite happy to walk on the path. But the sign telling you, don't, awakens in you this desire, do. You tell children, close your eyes now, and you can think of anything you want, but don't think of a pink elephant. What did you think of? Pink elephant. Here's Augustine giving a classic example of what I'm talking about. There was a man called Augustine, a theologian in the church. He wrote a book called The Confessions of Saint Augustine. And he's describing this problem. There was a pear tree near our vineyard, laden with fruit. One stormy night, we rascally youths set out to rob it. We took a huge load of pears, not to feast on them themselves, but to throw them to the pigs. They were nice pears, but it was not the pears my wretched soul coveted. I had plenty better pears at home. I picked them in a feast of iniquity, he says. What was it that I loved? Was it the pleasure of acting against the law? In order that I, a prisoner under rules, might have maimed counterfeit of freedom by doing what was forbidden. See what he's saying? Because I knew I shouldn't be doing this, that provoked in me a desire to do it. The pears were desirable simply because they were forbidden. The forbidden fruit became desirable. That's why censorship doesn't work very well. If you tell people, don't listen to this music is very bad, this record is really bad, whatever you do, don't listen to this music. What happens? People line up outside the shop and buy it. Some of our friends from Iran made me smile a few weeks ago. There was a man on the national TV in Iran, one of the leading religious authorities in the country. He held up a Bible. This is a very dangerous book. This is a very bad book. This is a terrible book. Under no circumstances should you read this book. What's happened ever since in Iran? Bang, an explosion of people wanting to read the Bible. They say to me, that man was like a recruiting sergeant to get people to read the Bible. Because by telling everybody, this is a dangerous book, if you're a young person, if you're a teenager, you think, I want to read that dangerous book. So downloads of the Bible in Iran have now become very difficult for the government to stop because the man told them, don't do it. Now everybody wants to do it. So the must not, don't, produces in us that desire to do it. We want to do it. So coveting is the root of other sins because it causes us to want what is forbidden. It's an invisible sin. It's to do with the heart. It's the root of other sins. And this sin begins close to home. Notice what the commandment says. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife, servant, animals. Neighbor. Why does it mention neighbor? There was a popular film in 1991, quite a few years ago now. It's a bit of a horrible film called The Silence of the Lambs. But it was about a serial killer and a young FBI agent. And in this film, the serial killer is being interviewed by the FBI, the police agent, to try and understand the way that someone who's killed thinks. Her name was Clarice. The actor asks her, what was the original sin, Clarice? Excuse me, she says. What was the original sin? I don't know. I don't have time to play games. Think. What was the sin that Adam and Eve committed? It was coveting. They wanted something they couldn't have. So what, she says. That's the answer, Clarice. What do you mean? The man you're looking for is a covetous man. He wants something that he can't have. And then he's giving a in a way, he's sort of giving a lecture in biblical theology. He's saying, we covet what we see every day. Go back, find his hometown, this killer. Find his hometown. Go back and see what he sees every day. The neighbor. Find out who his neighbors were. And there, when you find his hometown, what he sees every day, his neighbors, then you begin to see the answer. Now, why was he saying that? It was a film. But he was saying it because there's an element of truth in that. Your neighbor's house, your neighbor's wife, servants, animals. Really, we covered things the other side of the planet. But things we see every day, the next door neighbor, he's just had a promotion. Her daughter just got accepted at Oxford. They're driving a new car. They've added that extension to their house. We must keep up with the Joneses. See what's happening? It's the neighbor. So this sin begins close to home. So it's an invisible sin. It's the root of other sins. It begins close to home. And the sin springs from an ungrateful heart. What the covetous person is saying is, I've been treated unfairly. When God passed out gifts, I just had the crumbs. I covet my neighbor's house because I don't think the house that God's given me is good enough. I covet my neighbor's wife because I think, the wife God's given me is not good enough. Covet my neighbor's children because I'm saying, I wish my children were as clever, as good, whatever it is, as those children. I covet my neighbor's promotion because, look at my career. Covet my neighbor's good health. Oh, God isn't looking after me very well. Covet my neighbor's wealth because God isn't taking very good care of me. See what the covetous man is doing? He's unthankful. He's doubting God's wisdom, God's goodness, God's love ultimately. So in a way, coveting is an attack on God. God, you haven't taken care of me. Blame God. So it's an invisible sin. It's the root of other sins. It begins close at home. The sin springs from an unthankful heart, an ungrateful heart. And then fifthly, the sin destroys life. Jesus told a parable of a rich fool. I think it's the parable of Western society, really. A parable of a farmer whose crops had brought a great harvest. The harvest was so good that the farmer didn't know how to handle it. So he decided he'd pull down his barns and build bigger ones. Listen to the Lord Jesus giving this parable. It's in Luke chapter 12. And if you want to turn to it in the church Bibles, it's on pages 701. Luke chapter 12. Then Jesus spoke a parable to them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man yielded plentifully. And he thought within himself, saying, what shall I do, since I have no room to store my crops? So he said, I'll do this. I will pull down my barns and build greater, and there I will store all my crops and my goods. And I will say to my soul, soul, you have many goods laid up for many years. Take your ease, eat, drink, and be merry. The UK, 2017. But God said to him, fool, this night your soul will be required of you. Then whose will those things be which you have provided? So is he who lays up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. Now we must be clear what the Lord Jesus Christ is saying. The Lord Jesus is not condemning business success. The Lord Jesus is not condemning planning for the future. The Lord Jesus is not condemning if you've extended your property. The Lord Jesus is not even saying it's wrong to enjoy life. He's not condemning prosperity. What happened which ended up this rich man being called fool? Well, you see what he was doing. He was acting with no concern for anyone else, no regard for anyone else other than himself, and he just forgot God. It's the classic description of a covetous man. He wanted more barns to store his ever-increasing harvests, and he was saying to himself he was a self-sufficient man. He could eat, drink, be merry. Enjoy life. Live life to the full. Do what you like. Forget God. He didn't need God. He had done it on his own. Eat, drink, be merry. I say it could be the parable for the UK in 2017. Is this man going to live forever? Because if you're going to die someday, coveting is the most foolish thing you can do. And we're living in the most technologically advanced generation the world has ever known. There are ways of communication now that our grandparents wouldn't even have imagined. You just pick up a phone and send a message to the other side of the world. No generation has had such technological advance. And for Western Europe, so many privileges. So we ought to be the most blessed people in the history of the world, but we are not. We hear week by week, month by month, the news reports of the increasing numbers of people who feel miserable, neurotic, unhappy, confused, dissatisfied, marriages breaking up, homes breaking up, children struggling to find their identity, lives not holding together. You think this rich man, he got it made, but there was this massive problem. He was a covetous man and he'd forgotten God. Who was born in, I think it's called Tupelo, Mississippi in the USA. Tupelo, Mississippi, the USA. The birthplace of Elvis Presley. Now, I've never been to Tupelo in Mississippi, but I know people who have been there, and they say everywhere you go in Tupelo, there's the evidence of Elvis Presley. In one restaurant you can go into, there's a table reserved and roped off by itself, and on the table there's a sign reserved for Mr. Elvis Presley. I should tell the younger people here who don't know who I'm talking about. Elvis Presley was a very famous singer. He's been dead quite a long time. In lots of the restaurants, the walls are covered with pictures of Elvis Presley. In another shop, there's a sign. This is the shop where Elvis Presley purchased his first guitar. So Elvis Presley's big business in Tupelo. But this successful singer, Elvis Presley, what happened to him? Well, he was so disfigured from drug abuse towards the end of his life that people began to even not recognize who he actually was. He'd become just a bloated image of what he'd once been. He had more silver and gold and platinum hit records. Wasn't MP3s in those days, it was records. Well, 110 in all, more than anyone else in all of history, twice as many as the Beatles. So you could say Elvis had it all. Money, fame, wealth, success, power. All the things that people covet, he had. And he turned to drugs because yet there was an aching emptiness in the center of his heart. You see, if having things could make us happy, we would be the happiest people in the world. But this man, Elvis, who had it all, but still in the core of his being, there was an aching void that this world can never fill. That's what coveting does to the soul. It promises happiness, but it leaves us restless. What happened to Elvis on the outside happens to us on the inside. The soul becomes distorted, bloated, destroyed. So this is a very searching commandment. Let me apply it in three ways tonight. The first is, to a Christian, guard your heart. We must guard the heart because this is such a pressure in our society. Whether it's in idle thoughts, comparing cars, clothes, houses, a neighbor, impulsive desires to just spend money fueled by easy credit, unfair judgments on people who have more or less than we have,